So this is an event of housewarming. Yes?
Yes.
This is your new house. I heard you got the key yesterday. Congratulations. It looks like they custom made the kirtan hall for you. And you invited some friends? So these are some friends of yours from work or neighbors or?
Yeah, so Scott actually, he helped us find the house. His daughter, Andrea.
You're a realtor? Okay. Good going. You had a good find. This is the daughter and this is your father?
Yeah.
You're both realtors? You found the house though, right? Okay. Good for you. And others who are new? Okay. Okay. Well, especially in honor of our realtor guests, father and daughter, and others who may be somewhat new, begin and just a little sharing. We'll be speaking on a verse from Bhagavad Gita, a few verses from Bhagavad Gita. Bhagavad Gita, you've heard of it before? Yes? Okay. How about your daughter? I'm saying your daughter. What's your name?
Sandra.
Kendra. Kendra.
This is Scott.
Scott. Scott and Kendra, okay. You ever heard of this before, Bhagavad Gita? Zippo, okay. Okay. Well, you're going to hear something about it tonight. Bhagavad Gita is part of a much bigger work, a history of greater India, if you were to translate in English the title. You stick around the devotees a little bit, you'll hear some of these terms again and again. Maha Bharata. Bharata's a name for greater India. Maha means great. So the history of greater India. The history of kings and, keeping it really simple, but a theme within it is a struggle between good and evil. Classic. Between good and evil. And just like, which is stronger? Light or darkness? It's real easy. Turn on the light and darkness goes away. So, good prevails. And it's the lesson of Mahabharata. Stand by the side of good, and even you're challenged by those who are evil, good prevails. Goodness is the way to live. Virtue, and so forth. So that's the teaching through these histories. What are standards of virtue? What's the standard of the duty for mankind? And those that break duty, they're around and they cause difficulty for those that abide by goodness, but goodness prevails, even though it looks like it's dangerous. In the middle of that big epic is Bhagavad Gita. And Bhagavad Gita is a treatise on transcendence, going beyond the struggle between good and evil. Very interesting. So the anecdotal message here that leads us into Bhagavad Gita. The primary reason that I'm here in Austin is the University of Texas. Because in the month of September, for the past so many years, I've been visiting universities in the month of September because fall semester opens and so many students aren't strapped on yet to the conveyor belt. They don't have so many big exams and big papers and big deadlines, so There it says more, their minds are more open to consider coming to a bhakti yoga program or discussion in Bhagavad Gita. So, I went to one of those programs at the University of Illinois in Chicago. And I didn't know this before I went there. Well, I didn't know lots of things. One of the things I didn't know is that all summer long they've been conducting a program. Even if it was summer vacation, because it's not largely a residential school, but largely a commuter school, many of the students at that school could attend a weekly program all summer long. So it had this like core of 11, 12 students. So when the semester began, they were going. And that was the second time they had some gathering. And I came early, because I like to get there early. And there was quite a gathering. They were also early. So I walked up to one young man and said, are you one of the regulars? Or you know, he interrupted and said, no, this is my first time. Oh. How did you find out about it? I saw one of the flyers. What intrigued you about the flyer to come? He said, I'm interested in transcendence. And I'm reading Bhagavad Gita. This is his first time. I said, okay. How far have you read in Bhagavad Gita? So far I'm at chapter 4. And would you mind sharing with me what's the main thing that you've gathered so far through chapter 4? And he said, well, Krishna is the source of everything, and he's describing to Arjuna how one can regain one's relationship with the source of everything just by hearing from him and taking shelter of him and listening very carefully to what he says and making that your way of life. He said, and we're supposed to do that too. I said, pretty good. Pretty good. And what did you find was the most difficult thing so far from what you've read? Children? This is Bhagavad Gita. Children, like, you know, it's no fun. You gotta go and have some fun somewhere. What was the thing that you found difficult? Well, there's some discussion about being detached from the fruits of your work. And I kind of get it, and I kind of don't get it. And I don't really understand how you're supposed to do it either. But I think if I keep reading Bhagavad Gita, I'll understand it better. So we had some discussion about that. So here we are at the beginning of the fruits of your work program in the form of a house. And from the message of Bhagavad Gita, how are we to understand these things? How are you to properly enter into a new possession, a nice big house? With probably a nice big mortgage and a nice big insurance payment and a nice big everything. Big garage. So, that's our topic. It's connected to, well, the first lesson of Bhagavad Gita. This is the first lesson of Bhagavad Gita. Is Arjuna wants to know, How do I understand what is my duty in life? The circumstance is particular. The evil, the forces of evil, have tried to kill his brothers, have tried to kill specifically on another occasion one of his brothers, Bhima, very powerful Bhima. They tried to burn them in a fire in a house at night, like just attempted murder. They're bad guys. And usurped their kingdom and tried to strip their wife naked. And, you know, they were bad guys. Bad guys. So there was a plan, and the virtuous brothers, there were five of them, by love of progenitor, they were the eldest son was to become king. But the cousins usurped the kingdom. So Krishna went as an emissary on behalf of the five brothers and said, you know what? You be the king. You rule the whole world. Although the five brothers, they're entitled to the kingdom, the whole world. You'll rule the world. Just give them five states. No. Give them five cities. No. Give them five villages. And they'll serve you. They'll assist you in ruling the world. No. I can't live on the same planet as those five. Duryodhana. There must be war. And either I'll be destroyed or they'll be destroyed. And the ruler will become the emperor. So the battle is about to begin, and Arjun doesn't want to do it. He sees the people on the other side. He gives virtuous reasons why he can't. And so he's prepared to stop being a royal personality and just become a mendicant. Go live in the forest and live that way. And then he becomes confused and submits to Krishna and says, what's my duty? How am I to understand? What is my duty? Classic. And then the lesson of Bhagavad Gita begins first, and I'm paraphrasing a lot of this. Krishna indicates, before we speak about what your duty is, let's speak about who you are. And Krishna speaks about the soul. Distinct from the covering of the soul, the body and the mind. And we belong to the category of spirit. That's who we are. And so there's this very nice lesson of distinction between matter and spirit. It's one of the systems of yoga, Sankhya yoga, an analytical study of the categories of matter and the categories of spirit. So that's very nice. And then Krishna says, now that I've summarized this system of Sankhya, now I'm going to explain Buddhi yoga. So it's another way of saying what Bhagavad Gita is. It's a system of yogas or types of yoga that connect one with the Supreme, once again, or connect one with transcendence, like this young man was asking. I'm interested in transcendence, but I'm not sure how to get free from attachment to the fruits of my work, like the rest of us. We can, get an A in a Bhagavad Gita class exam, but to do it, that separates the men from the boys. So, Buddhi is a very nice verse, important classic verse, where Krishna characterizes or contrasts the position of one who is fixed in Buddhi. Buddhi means spiritual intelligence, as distinct from material intelligence. Material intelligence is, how to build something. How to build a house. How to build a skyscraper. How to build a city. Urban design. Architecture. Art. That the university is all the fields of study in the university. Help us to sharpen the skills of analyzing how to do this and how to do that. The push and pull of technology and engineering and science. And knowing that you can do something, you can earn a living. Material intelligence. Spiritual intelligence, Krishna identifies later in Bhagavad Gita, it's the understanding of how to reach Him. How to navigate your way through this complex world in in such a way, at every step, you're coming closer to God realization. How to do that requires intelligence. That's buddhi. So those that have buddhi, Krishna says in this chapter too, their aim is one, that their activities are diverse, but whatever they do, their aim is one. That one aim is attaining the association of Krishna, attaining the shelter of Krishna. And those who are not possessing buddhi or spiritual intelligence, their aims are many-branched. Bahusha ka yanantasha buddhayo vyavasayinam. And then the verse particularly that I wanted to speak about today, it's chapter 2, text 43, if you'd like to open your book. Text 44. Chapter 2, text 44. If you know the verse, you can say it with me. Bhogaishvarya prasaktanam taya pritta chetasam vyavasayatmika buddhi samadhav na vidyate. In the minds of those who are too attached to sense enjoyment and material opulence, and who are bewildered by such things, the resolute determination for devotional service to the Supreme Lord does not take place. So, Bhoga and Aishvarya. Bhoga means material enjoyment, sense gratification. Senses meet sense object with the expectation of enjoyment. That's Bhoga. And Aishvarya means opulence. Bhoga Aishvarya Prasaktanam. The Sanskrit word asakti, those practicing devotees, you're familiar with that term, it means attachment. It's a very elevated stage of spiritual life. You become attached to Krishna and devotional service to Krishna. But if one isn't attached to Krishna and devotional service to Krishna, one's going to be attached to something else. And this prefix pra means very attached to sense enjoyment and opulent life. Taya pratichetasam vyavasayatmika buddhi, the same spirit, singular focused spiritual intelligence. Again, what that means is everything, whether you're putting your shoes on, whether you're taking a shower, whether you're sitting in a classroom, whether you're sitting in your workplace, whether you're doing whatever you're doing, brushing your teeth, walking from one side of the room to the other. Each aspect of life has driving it or guiding it is an intelligence. How I should do this thing, or the purpose of this thing, is to bring my consciousness closer to the Supreme. Like this young man was asking about transcendence. He's pursuing transcendence. What a fantastic, I'm eager to go back and meet that young man. Because it's so rare to find those who have that hankering and are very clear what the hankering is, not exactly knowing how to go about it, though. So Bhagavad Gita is like a map to get you there. Samadhau na vidyate. The resolute determination for devotional service doesn't take place when there's that attachment. So, another place that I went was Washington University. And there was a Chinese student who was majoring in business. And he's been reading Bhagavad Gita. And he said, you know, I keep reading about, in reading Bhagavad Gita, I read about detachment. And, you know, detachment and renunciation. And he said, you know, that really doesn't go very well with economic development. Because economic development means it's consumer economics. So people have to consume. And that drives the economy. Right? If people didn't want to buy houses, what would you do? Grow corn or something, you know. Grow dark. Anyway. So I said, well, there's another kind of economics called spiritual economics. I said, really? That sounds interesting. They don't teach that at Washington University. Spiritual economics. Well, you know, the spiritual economics is whatever it is that you use it for Krishna. They're still consuming, just like people still buy houses. People that follow Bhagavad Gita still buy houses. But the distinction is the consciousness behind the activity is different. And the consciousness that's behind the activity is, it's this is meant for service to Krishna. And with that comes the detachment. It's there, but it's not for the purpose of bhoga or aishwarya. It's for the purpose of bhakti. So, this is, you know, I'll go to 102 Bhagavad Gita, or like, you know, a little more advanced message, but it's the same message. This is, some of you are familiar with Rupa Goswami. Anyone not familiar? Our regulars here. Not familiar with who is Rupa Goswami? Maybe some of you don't know, you just don't want to raise your hand. Anybody not know Rupa Goswami? The chanting that we do is very ancient, but in this, according to the Vedic picture of time, time is cyclical, like the seasons cycle, and so ages of mankind also cycle according to the Vedic picture of time, and the age that we're in presently is called Kali Yuga. Yuga means age, the age of quarrel and hypocrisy. So the process for spiritual awakening is purposefully, by design, very simple. And it's praising and singing God's name. Our Father who art in heaven. Hallowed be thy name. Same. So, that chanting of the holy name was drawn from the scripture and made very prominent and public, and it's a central part of what devotees of Krishna, our ISKCON members, do. We chant Hare Krishna, like the musical, and on our rosary beads or prayer beads. And sing God's name. So Lord Chaitanya is the one who, you could say, popularized that or inaugurated the congregational singing and praising of God's holy name. And one of his chief followers who received direct teachings from Lord Chaitanya, who then instructed him, please write literature to expand on the teachings that I've given you. His name is Rupa Goswami, one of the chief followers of Lord Chaitanya. So he explained in two verses This is a Rupa Goswami class right now. What is renunciation? Like, you know, this Washington University student saying, you know, what is it? Which is another way of saying what this other University of Illinois student was saying, you know, how do you work? Renounce without attachment to the results. It's not like go to work and when they offer you a paycheck, you say, no, thank you. That's not what it means. It means when they offer the paycheck to you, you recognize this belongs to Krishna, and therefore I'm meant to use it in Krishna's service. So part of my Krishna services, I make the mortgage payment on Krishna's house, and I pay the electric bill for Krishna's house, and I make the car payment and the insurance payment, and on behalf of Krishna, in Krishna's service. It's just the consciousness behind the activity becomes each activity is for Krishna. Each activity. It's not a secular teaching. Bhagavad Gita is not, this is what I do for God and this is what I do for my family and my nation and my country. Everything's for Krishna, including whatever it is, including my family. It's service to Krishna. So, this message of detachment, of just another little anecdotal, just I think it helps to understand the message I'm trying to share. One of the things that we do, I've done for years and years, in our temples, religious studies groups from colleges and high schools and places like that, they like to come to visit the temple. The teacher brings their students, and they come at a time, because I know this from discussing with them, they come when we're doing our rituals, because in high school and in college, a distinction between this one and that one is their rituals. So they come when we do our rituals. That means we greet the deities, we do Guru Puja, we sit and sing Jai Radha Madhava, that's one of our rituals. And then we speak Srimad Bhagavatam, that's one of our rituals. Then we go and take prasadam, it's one of our rituals. You know, vegetarian food, we eat. So, one of the common questions, so an introductory, you know, really introductory presentation is made to help them understand who we are, what we're doing, you know, what's it all about. And a common question, there's many, like, you know, what's the stuff on your forehead? Very deep question. Is there some meaning of the color that you're wearing? So we answer those questions. But another common question is, in order to be a member of this organization, do you have to renounce all your worldly possessions? Meaning like monastic life. Because in the West, monks take a vow of poverty. It's even in some declarations of, anyway, governmental things to get social security and, you know, So, vows of poverty. It's a common phrase in America, in the West. So, in order to become a member of this organization, do you have to renounce all worldly possessions? And the answer I like to give them is no. You don't have to renounce all your worldly possessions. Rather, you have to renounce the misconception that you have worldly possessions to renounce. They go, what? So, in other words, everything belongs to Krishna. We enter the world owning nothing. We leave the world owning nothing. And in between, we're very busy trying to fill our pockets and make things mine. And then we leave the world owning nothing. So instead of filling your pockets, understand what everything, who is the proprietor of everything? Before you got here and after you leave. And in between. And live your life accordingly. purposely sharing you with you some some anecdotes from the university scene, so you get a little flavor. At MIT, the topic that the organizer wanted me to speak about is why bad things happen to good people. There's a book called Why Bad Things Happen to Good People. So at the end of the thing was, you know, it's karma, but it means we may not be able to trace out what the bad thing was back there that brings the misfortune today, or the good thing back there that brings the good fortune today. But if there's good fortune, it means there was some good activity. If I do something that's an act of kindness unto others, that kindness will come back. An eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. As you sow, so you shall reap. And a bad activity, so something comes. The advocacy of Bhagavad Gita is beyond the good and bad. Be transcendental. What's that? Well, you do everything for Krishna. You connect with transcendence. You connect with the Supreme. And in that connecting with the Supreme, this is the lesson from the MIT students that I'm sharing with you. There's two things essential. One is proprietorship. The house. Or anything. We enter the world owning nothing. We leave the world owning nothing. And in between, same. We own nothing. Although on the deed it may say that you're the owner. The consciousness of one who's Krishna's devotee is Krishna's the proprietor and I'm the manager. Big difference. See the owner and you're what you employed? Something like that. So, if the manager starts thinking he's the proprietor, whoa, you got a problem. The proprietor's the proprietor, the manager's the manager, so you're the manager of Krishna's property. Have your name on it, you're responsible for it. And the bank account's got your name on it, you're responsible. And the bills have your name on it. And the taxes have your name on it. But it's Krishna's. And you're working on Krishna's account. Krishna's the proprietor. Big difference. Mega difference. To sustain that consciousness, there has to be a spiritual conception of who you are, because I and mind go together like a hand and glove. You know, when the fingers wiggle, the glove wiggles. You take the glove off of the hand, the glove isn't going to wiggle. So the mind conception needs to fit the I conception. So what's the spiritual I conception? Well, the second chapter of Bhagavad Gita, we already discussed it. It's I'm spirit soul. But more than that, I'm spirit soul, part and parcel of the Supreme Soul. More than that, I have an eternal relationship of loving service to the Supreme Soul. I am Krishna's. That's who I am. So, if I am Krishna's, then what's mine? We could say nothing is mine, but once, at least one thing is mine. My relationship with Krishna is mine. The capacity to act in my relationship with Krishna, that's mine. So whether I'm in the house that's got my name on the deed, and the mortgage at the bank, and the checking account that pays the mortgage payments, or I'm living, you know, whatever the arrangements are, living in an apartment, or living in a forest, or living in a tree, or living wherever I'm living. I'm in God's kingdom, and I have different functions within God's kingdom. I need to act appropriately. So now here's back to Rupa Goswami. He explained it this way. Renunciation, a misconception of renunciation is to give things up. Like, you know, renounce your worldly possessions, when really, whose worldly possessions are they? Anyway. So, Rupa Goswami says, that kind of renunciation, Hari Sambandha Vastuna, And our Indian members, you know, Hari Sambandha, that which is in relationship with Hari. Vastuna. Vastuna means stuff, like things, objects, paraphernalia, vastu. Hari Sambandha Vastuna. Mumukshobi Parityago Vairagyam Palgu Katyate. It's Palgu Vairagya, that things that are in relation to Hari, you give up. They're not yours to give up. Supposing I, you know, walk down the street, this is a nice neighborhood, I see a nice BMW, I renounce it. There's a Rolls Royce, I renounce it. Mercedes-Benz, I renounce it. Ferrari, I renounce that too. They're not mine to renounce. What renunciation? That's palgu vairagya katyate. Now, what true renunciation is, I'll go slowly, because this is our topic for this evening. Anasaktasya vishayan yatarham upayunjitaha nirbandha krishna sambandhe yuktam vairagya uchate. We'll unpack that. Anasaktasya vishayan. What's this word vishaya mean? Sense enjoyment. Vishaya. It's right in Bhagavad Gita. Vishaya vindivartante nirahadarsha dehinam. For those who are dehinam, those who are within a body, that's us, right? The soul within a body, that's dehinam. To give up vishaya vinivartante niraharsha dehinam. For those who are embodied, to give up sense gratification, very difficult. But those who are experiencing a higher taste, it's very easy. You know, in this hand is a lesser taste, in this hand is a higher taste. Which one do you want? Not difficult. Higher taste, please. So, what's that higher taste? It's the happiness of serving the Supreme. When you're experiencing that happiness of serving the Supreme, the lesser taste, the Vishaya alternative, it's not very attractive. Although it's available, it's not attractive because it's a higher. This other one's higher taste. So, anasaktasya means without attachment to sense gratification. Anasaktasya vishayan. Yatarham upayunjita. That's like really mysterious and very important. Yatarham means according to suitability. So, I'm a sannyasi. This color means I'm living a renounced life. I've, for some 30 years, formal vows of renunciation. I don't have a house. I don't have a bank account. I don't have a home. I don't have a car. I use a car, but I don't have, you know. So, I'm just, my life is depending upon Krishna. Now, somebody may have a home, may have a wife, may have a car, may have a, so without attachment to those things for the purpose of sense enjoyment, according to suitability, yatarham upayunjata, you accept them. This is the topic for the evening. You accept them according to suitability. What does that mean? According to suitability. So suitable to me is if I went out and got a job and, you know, bought a house and, you know, as a sannyasi and did those things, that wouldn't be suitable. There would be something wrong with me. And if you, who are householders, did what I did, that wouldn't be so suitable. With a wife and family and dependents, you can't exactly do as I do. That's still according to suitability. And then so many other things. You know, What? How many pairs of shoes do you need? For example, I don't know, you know, pursue it, but now one can get more pairs of shoes than you need. Maybe you need, you know, anyway, because it's hot weather, you need sandals. And then you're going to go visit me in Chicago, and it's got to bring something more than sandals. Okay, so you got two pairs of shoes. What else? You get the idea. According to requirement, without attachment to sense gratification, not as required. Or, like, you know, you have small children. You get small children things. How many do you need small children things? You get the idea. So it's like, according to what's required. I travel, like, lots. And I find it fascinating. I travel Southwest for a number of reasons. And they don't have... they don't have assigned seating. People just sit wherever they want to sit. So it's all the time people that don't know each other sitting next to each other. And one of the, it's like three of the last five travels, that almost the entire ride, like I like an aisle seat, so the middle seat and the window seat are occupied by some other people. And the whole way they're talking about the latest gadget. Yeah, and they pull out three of them. And they show what those three of them do. And then, you know, there's a new one. They talk about the new one. Yeah, maybe the new one has some more bells and whistles. And like, it's consumer economics. It drives the economy. But is it really required? Anyway, according to suitability. And in our teaching, the companion literature for Bhagavad Gita is this one, Srimad Bhagavatam. And Srimad Bhagavatam teaches the path of progressive decreasing material involvement. Nivritti is the Sanskrit term. So if today I need five pairs of shoes, maybe tomorrow I only need four. You know, like that. As one progresses, it's inversely proportionate. As one becomes more spiritually advanced, that which I think I need in order for my mind to be peaceful will diminish, because the higher taste, the lesser taste, has faded. So that's this according to suitability matter. Yatharhova punyunjitaha. And nirbanda, without being attached, without affinity for enjoying matter, nirbanda, Krishna sambande, that which is in relation to Krishna, yuktam vairagya uchate. Therein lies what vairagya is. Utilizing things in Krishna's service, without attachment to being the enjoyer of those things, and then comes this variable, like, you know, the fulcrum moves depending upon you. What, according to suitability. And even in our own life trajectory, the fulcrum should move. Like, as we progress further, what we think that we need, it will diminish. Naturally. It's one of the ways Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains this. I'm asked sometimes, how do we know that we're making tangible spiritual progress? So Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, one of the ways is that the mind is dwelling less on the objects which one has some affinity to be the enjoyer of. Mind just doesn't go there so much. You know, it's not like you have to, you know, admonish it. It just doesn't go there so much. You may have to, you know, some things your mind shouldn't go there. But when spiritual happiness and spiritual well-being and spiritual light is in your life, by, like this young man, approaching, as you're getting closer to transcendence, the attraction and repulsion of duality, I like, I don't like, I feel happy, I feel sad, I feel I'm being honored, I feel I'm being dishonored, and all those things of duality, they just fade. Ultimately, they become literally insignificant. And in favor of transcendence, or reality with a capital R, or truth with a capital T, or life with a capital L, or happiness with a capital H. That's our real life. And meanwhile, we're living, I'm buying a house for my family to take care of my responsibility as a householder. See that my children have what they need and see that, and living a responsible life. And right behind the act is the thought that let me dedicate this to Krishna service. Nirbandha Krishna Sambandhe Yuktam Vairagya Uchate. That's the platform of detachment. It's attachment to the Supreme. Same as Krishna teaches in chapter 5 of Bhagavad Gita. What is called renunciation? Because Krishna... Anyway, I like Bhagavad Gita. Arjun, like this young man, Arjun doesn't get it because he doesn't want to get it. And we don't get it because we don't want to get it. Like, how to do it? Because we're attached to Bhoga and Aishwarya. Right in the very beginning of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Trigunya Vishaya Veda. The Vedas deal mainly with Vishaya. There's that word again. What's Vishaya mean? Sense enjoyment. Trigunya Vishaya Veda. The Vedas deal mainly with enjoyment in the three modes. Nishtrigunya Bhavarjuna. Very beginning. Transcendence. That's the message of Bhagavad Gita. So, our mission is transcendence. I'll just share this little anecdotal thing and I'll end. And five different occasions, otherwise you just talk about it, on these five different occasions. One of them was in Sugar Land, is that where it is? In outside Houston. Where's the NASA complex? Outside Houston? Clear Lake. Ah, okay. So, thank you. One evening I was invited, I was invited to a program in Clear Lake. And I was told the husband is a NASA rocket scientist. And the wife is a medical doctor. And all the people in the house are either rocket scientists or medical doctors, friends of the family. That's your audience. So, I did a little experiment. I said, you don't know me, I don't know you, and I'm going to ask you a little question. But please let me finish the question before you, raise your hand or supply the answer. Here's the question. How many of you would agree with the following, that the following statement is true? Listen carefully. That the purpose of religion is to live your life according to the codes of theistic conduct, for by so doing, you will gain pious credits. By gaining those pious credits, in this life, you will prosper, and after this life, you'll attain to heaven. I didn't even get it all out, and they got their hands up. And it's not just, rocket scientists and medical doctors or people from India. It's all over the world. It's what people think the purpose of, commonly, what people think the purpose of religion is. The message of Bhagavad Gita is that's not the purpose. There's a purpose behind that purpose. There's a higher purpose. There's transcendence. Henry David Thoreau got it. It's transcendental, right? He was a transcendental poet, speaking about transcendence. And what is that transcendence? Well, there's another purpose. What live a theistic life, live according to the codes of religion, for a higher purpose than pious credits that allow you then in this life to prosper and in the next life attain heaven. What's the other purpose? It's to go beyond good and bad and enjoyment, bhoga and aishvarya, prasaktanam. It's to go beyond that. What's beyond that? It's a loving relationship with the Supreme. So whether it's this or that, feature of duality. The hankering is not for this, and all please, not that. Enjoying the prosperity and avoiding, you know, the good fortune, ill fortune. Transcendental life is another purpose altogether. The other purpose altogether is satisfaction of Krishna. Let me live theistic life for the satisfaction of Krishna. Let me take care of and be a good citizen within my community and amongst the people as an offering of service unto Krishna. Let me take care of my family and train my children in good conduct and good character and all of that for the, let me deliver the soul of my dependents beyond the cycle of birth and death in service to Krishna. That's our transcendental life. It's a high ideal, but it doesn't change the activity, it changes the consciousness behind the activity. And final, one of the principal means of accomplishing all of that is the holy name. Through the chanting of the holy name, we connect with transcendence because the name and the object named are the same. Abhinatvam, nama namino. The name and the object named are abhinna, not different. So that sound vibration, just like the message of Bhagavad Gita, that's Krishna's words, and Krishna's words are not different than Krishna, and Krishna's name is not different than Krishna. So we're these, you know, tiny little living entities covered like anything with conditioning. At the same time, that sound vibration coming, pure sound vibration coming in contact with the living entity, awakens, cleanses, and awakens our dormant spiritual consciousness. So, sometimes we have these little housewarming things. Someone gets a new house, we do literally have a yajna and chant mantras and stuff. So we're doing this kind instead, the sound vibration yajna instead. Dedicate at the commencement of some important transition stage of life through sacred sound vibration. Receive the name of Krishna and the message of Krishna. Let them enter your heart and then commence the activity occupying the house, in this case, with dedication of the house and the activity and, you know, the family to Krishna's service. And then yet again and yet again and progressively through life like that. On our way to Krishna. Any discussion or questions from anyone? Yes.
How does the loving relationship with Krishna feels like?
How does it feel like? Nice. It's for starters, we can say it's not like anything of this world. So how do you describe something that's not of this world when our experience is primarily of this world? Well, you you describe it in terms of negation, or you describe it in terms of metaphor. You know, metaphor. Something that we know to understand something we don't know. So, transcendentalists, those that are in touch with transcendence, that are in touch with the relationship with Krishna, they describe that relationship with Krishna in poetry, using metaphor and simile, because it's beyond our worldly experience. So to help us understand that which is beyond, they use it, metaphors and similes. But the simple Sanskrit terminology is there's no beginning and no end. It's ever increasing. It's by nature full of knowledge. Something, here's the metaphor, like a spark that's away from a fire. And you bring the spark closer by the fire and put it back right in the fire again before it's like, you know, kind of glowing but not fiery. Put it back in the fire and it's fiery. The fullness of the fire becomes the quality of the spark by contact with the fire. So the fullness of Krishna becomes experienced by the qualities of Krishna become experienced by once in contact with Krishna. The Sanskrit word is rasa. Mixing of different bhavas, our ecstasies, in different ways. There's a whole science to it, but the feeling of it is ecstasy, not like happiness that comes and it goes, but ecstasy that knows no end. But there's different varieties of it. In full consciousness, like, you know, in a bright light, there's no darkness. Not like relative happiness and relative sadness. I've been studying Sri Brahma Samhita, and you read verse 56. Shriya Kanta Kanta Purusha Kalpataravo Droma Bhumis. The verse is describing this life in the spiritual world, where every walk is a dance, every speaking is a song. The water is like nectar. The trees are desire trees, wish-fulfilling trees. The cows are Surabhi cows. You know, it's a life of unending. Well, it's beyond a place of no anxiety. It's beyond Vaikuntha. For our friends here. This place is a place of anxiety. The kingdom of God is described as a place where there's no anxiety. Anxiety is because we have something, we're going to lose it. Or we don't have something and we want it. And then we get it and we're afraid we're going to lose it. So it's anxiety when you don't have it and anxiety when you have it. It's an anxiety. And so many other forms of anxiety in the spiritual world. The kingdom of God is a place of no anxiety. But beyond the place of no anxiety is unlimited spiritual bliss. So what's that? You know, it's not within our experience. Jiva Goswami says, it's very nice, in his commentary, he says, if in Goloka, all walking is a dance, what's dancing? If all ordinary water is like nectar, what's the nectar? If all speech is singing, what's singing? And it's not just being in this, like, Wonderland, Alice in Wonderland, It's the loving relationship, everything centered around a loving relationship with the Supreme. Complete harmony in loving relationship with the Supreme. And there's no passage of time, because time, this is another, time destroys things. Like we're sitting here. Before we were sitting here, we were somewhere else. And we're finished sitting here, we're going to go somewhere else. Time destroys everything. It brings things about and it destroys things. But there's not passage of time even for a fraction of a moment. There's no destruction. It's beyond our experience in this realm. But life is eternal. Full of knowledge. Full of bliss eternally. Quality of love of the residents of Goloka is so overwhelming that when Krishna sent, for example, Krishna sent Uddhava to go to Vrindavan to experience the intensity of that love of the residents of Vrindavan, and when he did, his eyes got really big and he simply desired to stay in Vrindavan and somehow get the dust from the feet of the residents of Vrindavan upon his head. To benedict him. Just that mercy. Oh. Happiness beyond compare. Nice question. Anything else? You like singing. Yes? When you're singing, what happens? Like, you know, the worries of the world just go somewhere. And there's the sound of the holy name and a relish within your consciousness and contact with the holy name. It's not just a melody, it's contact with the holy name. And we're not in very full consciousness. So whatever that is, multiply that by a few million. And that's what it's like. Yes. Depends on the person, doesn't it? I don't have children, but I have spiritual children. I have children that relate to me as a spiritual father. So it depends on our situation. In short, depends on our situation. Depends on the nature of your wife and the nature of your children. But and depends on the nature of your parents. And each of us are different. Each of our spouse and children, and so it's an essential element is a commitment to the relationship. Without abandoning your own identity and your own spiritual well-being in order to fulfill the needs of this one, that one, the other one, the other one, the other one. You understand what I'm saying? There's a saying, charity begins at home. You've heard that one, right? So the inner charity is your heart. So be charitable. Make sure that there's charity given, that there's spiritual nourishment given. So when that spiritual nourishment is given, then you're much more capacity to give to your wife and to your children, to your parents, and the finer discrimination that tells you this is what's needed over here and that's what's needed over there. And I've said two things. You know, the essence of commitment to the relationship. But it's not the amount of time that you spend is the indicator of your commitment. Or with your children, the amount of stuff you give them is the indication of your commitment. It's the quality of the love and the commitment to the person, to the individual, depending upon their situation. To them, you're an important person. You're more important than practically anybody else. You're the father of the child and the husband of the wife and the son of the mother and father. Very important person. So the quality that you carry is more important than the volume of what you do or what you don't do. But when you do, it's from your heart and with conviction. And then there has to be some balance. Like, yes, that's your question. I'm placing a balance on the nourishing of your own well-being so that you can give to each of them. Is it clear? When you do that, then Krishna will give you the intelligence how the balance is to be done, depending upon the needs and the details, the particulars. You have something? No? You have something?
The thought of giving up that, even if I think that, okay, at the highest, when I have a higher taste, I'll give up this, that thought itself sometimes is scary. How can I give up this? So, how do you understand?
Ask your question very carefully, because I'll respond to your question. So, what's your question?
The question is, how do we get over that even fear or feeling that, okay, I have to leave, or at some point I will
leave
the case.
When a little child has a tricycle and he's riding his tricycle around and mom says, it's time to come and have your lunch. His tricycle is his world. He doesn't want to leave his tricycle. It's beyond that little child's experience that there's something more satisfying, more fulfilling. So like that,
yes.
Like that, so what I'm saying is, like that, being an adult, you can understand, having passed through so many things where I was attached to something and it was like my world, and now, you could try going outside and riding that same tricycle again, maybe, for 30 seconds or a minute. But you can't do it for long because those things that I'm attached to, the fear of losing them, it's similar. So just like this, that fear, just like leave it there. Don't pretend. pretend it's not there. Don't run away from it or just like smash it or deny it. But, you know, with intelligence, you tolerate it. And there's actually a much greater consciousness, and with that a much greater happiness. It's not even a loss. Like the tricycle. Or some, whatever. Part of it is fear of the unknown. But, you know, so when your relationship with Krishna is tangible and palpable, you're not bereft of anything. But if you don't have that relationship with Krishna, if I don't have that thing, what will I have? I may have nothing. I mean, I want nothing. So I better hold on to the something. That's the fear. It's not having, you know, the connection with Krishna. So be patient, and as is your capacity, or yatarham, according to suitability, you do the nirbandha Krishna sambandhe yuktam vairagya, which you do it according to your capacity. And as your consciousness grows, that hankering and the attachment and the fear of losing that thing fades. The whole thing fades. That happiness is an illusion. But when we're in illusion, we don't recognize it as illusion. We're afraid to lose our illusion. In favor of reality. Or the higher taste, the greater happiness, the happiness within. So be patient with yourself. And keep good association. And do your sadhana carefully. Don't worry about it too much. Worrying about it makes it look bigger than it is. Something else? Okay. What's next? Prasadam. Okay. So we're ready in the kitchen? I brought some Mahaprasadam. So a little bit. I hope I have enough to go around.